We're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses, people that were once in your shoes. Our TSBC alumni, speakers, and friends will shed light on growth strategies, resources, and inspiration to help you scale your creative business. Hey friends, I'm Katie Hunt, the founder of Trade Show Bootcamp, and welcome to another episode of Proof to Product. Today, I'm talking with Rhonda Warren of Colorbox Letterpress, which is a letterpress studio located in Dallas, Texas. Rhonda has a multifaceted business. She has a line of paper goods that she sells to both the retail and wholesale markets, as well as a bustling custom arm through which she sells custom wedding invitations, corporate event invitations, and everything in between. On today's episode, Rhonda jokes that she accidentally started her business that is still going strong after 13 years. She shares details about the custom side of her business and how relationships with local vendors and word-of-mouth referrals have made up almost 70% of her business. Rhonda also shares information about her team, how she knew it was time to hire, what everyone's roles are, and why she wished that she had hired sooner.
Hey, Rhonda, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
I'm excited for you to tell your story. I'm excited to learn more about your business too, because you've been in our community for quite some time now. You have such a vast business. You sell wholesale, you sell retail, and you do custom work. And those three things on their own are a lot to manage, but to do all three at the same time, I think that you've done a very good job of doing it together and making it look so seamless from the outside.
Thank you. It doesn't feel seamless from the inside all the time, but we manage. I feel like we probably could have grown our wholesale side a lot more had we not been doing the custom side too, but I still really enjoy it and really want to continue doing it. And I have three team members that help me. And so if I didn't have them, I definitely would not be able to do all of that.
Absolutely. Oh, I can't wait to dive into the story, but let's rewind a little bit and start with, what were you doing before Colorbox?
Well, before Colorbox, I feel like a lot of us come from the same background, but I was a graphic designer, and I'm a little bit older than most of, I think, the alums in the community. So I've been working for graphic design firms for about 15 years or so, and then decided it was time to make a change. I tried to buy this little paper store that was for sale at the time, and it was this cute little store. They imported papers, had handmade papers and all that. Long story short, she decided not to sell, but I still was ready for a change. So quit my job. I just started freelancing, doing graphic design. And then one day the lady that I was trying to buy the store from called me and said, "Hey, you said something that you liked letterpress. And someone just called me and there's a press that needs a home that's been left abandoned in this commercial space. And you can have it if you can move it."
Which is no small feat for those unfamiliar with letterpress.
So I called up my husband and I'm like, "So, hey, what do you think about this? You know, these presses are hard to find." And, you know, I hadn't seriously thought about doing letterpress, but I was like, "Yeah, I'm ready for something new." So I talked to him about it and he was like, "You know, we don't even know if it works." He's a mechanical engineer and very practical.
Right.
"Don't know if it works. We don't know how to use it. Where are we going to put it?" You know, all these things.
It sounds like all the questions my husband, who's also an engineer, would ask. I can see us having the same conversation.
Yeah. So when we hung up the phone, he was pretty sure we were not getting the letterpress, but surprise, we did. I called him up and said I'd take it. And now he's really glad that I did, obviously. But he was right. It didn't work right off the bat. And we had to clean it, fix it, find some new parts. Anyway, so I took it and basically just started playing around with it. And then I met another letterpress person, a Missing Cue Press. He was working with an event planner doing all their custom invitations. And he said, "Hey, they've got too much work for me. Do you want to come do some of it part, you know, just on a freelance basis?" So yeah. I started doing that and realized, you know, I could use the letterpress to create the invitations. So yeah. That's basically how we became. I was Colorbox Design before. Now I'm Colorbox Design and letterpress.
Nice. Okay. So this is really interesting to me because a lot of the times when I talk to people that do letterpress, they had a passion for printing. They had, you know, they'd taken a class at some point or they had they had done letterpress in the past, and that was really where their passion lies. But you, it sounds like you didn't have a background in letterpress, or you hadn't experienced it, but you had more of the creative juices on the graphic design side and the creative side.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, basically, I'm into letterpress by accident.
Yeah.
So, but I love it, and I've, you know, learned to do it really well and grow from there. So yeah, basically my business is an accident. Yeah.
You know, on some level, I think all of our businesses are an accident. It's easier to look back to in retrospect and be like, oh yeah, I could see how I got to where I am today. But at the time, it kind of felt like it was out of left field. So.
And you just got to go with the flow and go with the punches. So.
Absolutely. So where do you get your inspiration from when you are designing your work? You know, as we mentioned, you sell wholesale, you sell retail, direct to consumer, and then you also have the custom side of your business. I assume on the custom side, you know, a lot of your inspiration comes from the clients you're working with and their needs. But what about your wholesale and retail side? Where does that inspiration come from?
I mean, for me, I mean, we have, as I mentioned, the team. So there's four of us total, plus my husband who fixes things, but he's not full time. So three of us design. So for me, my inspiration comes a lot from nature, which is kind of boring, but I like to take hikes and take pictures of things really close up. I love the detail in nature and things like that. So, and I love to do that. I like to do calendars so I can do 12 months and like be able to draw like a series of drawings and things like that. And then as a group for the three of us that design, I mean, we just find things funny in our conversations or things we see when we're out at lunch or just out and about. And so basically it just comes from life, just as everybody. But
is it hard to marry three different designer styles and aesthetics into one brand?
And I think a lot of people probably think we're not a cohesive brand.
I'm not being critical, and I'm just curious.
But I mean, I'm being self-critical. We all have like a kind of a whimsical style about our drawings because we all draw. So it's not one person drawing everything. Yeah. I mean, and I can tell who drew something for the most part, but I don't know. We're kind of an eclectic brand, I guess, is how we marry it together. Like some of our things are super, super clean. And then I'm the busiest of the designers. Like my things are the ones that are all over the place. But yeah, I feel like with color and the types of products that we have, we kind of have different categories that we kind of pull it all together.
Yeah, I do think it looks cohesive, and I know you've had success with it. I just, from a logistics standpoint, you know, my mind goes to business. Like, how would I do that? Because I feel like other designers I've worked with have such a different style. But I guess that would also go into your interview process and how you're working with people, just to make sure that what they're doing resonates with you as the owner of the business and the brand that you want to put forth.
That's true. And like we all do, like when it comes time to do a release, we sit down and we're like, okay, let's brainstorm. We kind of come up with ideas. And at the end of the day, we honestly don't know who came up with the idea and who finished it. So it works really well.
Which I was going to say, that's an ideal situation. It's almost as if you're sharing a brain at that point.
It is. It's nice. We have a great group right now. Yeah.
So you mentioned you have four people on your team and three of them are designers. I assume they also handle other aspects of the business for you. How do you split those responsibilities?
We do. We have the fourth person. She handles our social media and then she does our packaging and shipping, as well as like all our custom, like our handwork for our custom projects. So she kind of is hands-on. And then she also contributes to the brainstorm and critiques of products as we go along. So she's that kind of more, I guess, organized side of the business. And then the rest of us, basically, we all act independently a lot on custom projects. Like they'll take the meeting, they do the pricing, follow it all the way through, do the billing even for their projects that are custom. And then products, we do the same thing. We just divide it up and kind of decide what we're going to do. And then we critique each other a lot and kind of, especially on words, we like look at everybody's words and kind of wordsmith things a little bit to make them come out better. And then Rochelle also, we have Tracy, Rochelle, and Teresa. So Rochelle handles our email blasts. So all of our, on both sides of the business for that. And then I do billing, you know, and the,
so you do have defined roles within the business, even though some of it is overlapped in different spots. So How have your products and the business in general shifted over the years?
I mean, I was trying to think about this. Our products, we really have just added to what we already had from the very beginning. Because when I started out, it was a very small line. And then now I feel like we're almost a little too big for our size. Like one of our really good categories in our line is our kits, which we have a Santa letter kit, a Tooth Fairy kit, a kids thank you letter kit, and then we have these ones that we call creative kits. And the little creative kits, it's like a magnifying glass with a notebook and a pencil and then a little muslin bag that all comes together for kids to go out into nature and draw things. Or we have a detective one, and then we have an artist kit. And that all came out of one of our custom projects where we did a murder mystery party, and we had the little magnifying glass in there. And so I just fell in love with this little magnifying glass, and I'm like, what can we do with this? So we made these little kits that we now sell, and they're one of our best sellers still. And then we,
that's so fun.
Yeah. And we just keep creating new kits. We have watercolor. We get a little set of watercolor and a brush, and then three little letterpress prints that you paint. So things like that. So we kind of expand. That's been a successful part of the line. So we just keep trying to think of new ways where we can expand on that section. And then we had one card that was like, sorry, I was crabby, please forgive me, which kind of inspired a whole nother section of our products. We have little sets of cards. They're business card size set cards with little tiny envelopes. And we call them emoji cards.
I think the fact that you're leveraging the custom work that you're doing and the ideas that are brewing over there and thinking about how that you can bring that into the retail side of your business and the wholesale side is really fascinating. One thing I wanted to ask you, as I was listening to you talk about the kits, I'm talking with a lot of coaching clients right now that are trying to expand into new categories. You know, they want to branch out of just typical paper products, notebooks and greeting cards and things like that. And something like your kit sounds amazing. It's creative, it's exciting, it's different and new. But one thing people are running up against is making their margins work for both wholesale and retail. And you've heard me say this before, that you don't have to sell everything to both wholesale and retail. If it doesn't work for your margins to wholesale it, you don't need to sell it there. Have you ever had an instance where you're developing a new product and you were running the numbers and you just felt like you couldn't make it work for wholesale, but you really did want to try it on the retail side?
We do. Last year we ran into that, and we did stir sticks, like acrylic stir sticks, which we didn't produce ourselves. We just designed, and then they're laser cut out of plexiglass. And we wanted to do all the reindeers plus Santa. So like they all, it's just a little red stick and it has the name like Rudolph and all that up the stir sticks. And we just, I don't feel like I would pay what the retail price would have to be if we, or if we did the wholesale. So basically we're just selling at our little shows that we do and online. And there's, I mean, we're not selling tons of them like that, but it just did not make sense to do it wholesale.
Yeah, I think there's a tipping point, right? Like if you want to try a new product, you oftentimes want to lower your risks by doing a smaller run. So you're not investing as much money or having a bunch of inventory that you don't know whether or not it's going to sell. But then, you know, as you see things grow, if you do see the demand is there, you can produce at a higher volume and get the price down. And maybe then it would work for wholesale. But I think from a product development standpoint, it's important to be conservative with that kind of stuff. And I just, you have such innovative different types of products. I wondered if you ran into that same problem.
We do. I mean, we struggle with it all the time. It's like, we really want to do something. And then we find ways to pinch our pennies. Like we change the paper or we run more up on the sheet, because with letterpress, it's your crank or however many times it goes through the press, make it one color. So we're always trying to find ways to get our costs where they need to be. But we have this huge spreadsheet that we run all our numbers for our products and go back and check them as prices change on papers and things to make sure that our margins are where they need to be. But it's tough. It's really tough.
It is tough. It's a delicate balance between being innovative and fresh and new and coming out with new things on a regular basis and, you know, also needing to make your margins work in an industry where, you know, the margins are sometimes slim.
They are slim. Yeah. And, but it is nice to have like the kits that are a little bit higher price. You can, I don't know, you make a little bit more money if your margins are right. easier yeah. than selling a lot of greeting cards.
No, I agree. I think that's where too, when I tell people, you know, you need to diversify in terms of the product categories that you're in. That's part of it. Having a mix of items that are still cohesive in aesthetics and style and use, you know, the end consumer, how they use them, but at the same time, having different mix of prices and right. margins.
And sometimes you have to educate the consumer, like, and the store owners, like what the product is, how you intended it to be used.
Yeah. So talk about that a little bit more. Cause the kits, I assume you had a little bit of educating you had to do in your packaging.
Right. And we try and explain things on our packaging a little bit, but our kits actually on our kit, our original kits, we don't put any kind of label. Those you look at them and I think it's self-explanatory. But then on the Tooth Fairy kit, like we have a nice little record for you to keep about the history of your child losing their teeth, like when it happened, how it happened. So that's kind of a little keepsake, as well as having the little receipts from the Tooth Fairy and the little bag to keep the tooth in. So yeah. We kind of have an explanation of that on the back. And our Santa letter kit, we do have a pretty big explanation on the label, because we have the letter for the child to write and then for the parent to write back as Santa. And just like the logistics of doing that and where you can send it off to get the postmark from the North Pole, which is kind of nice for the keepsake.
That's fun.
But that, and then like our Emota cards, the little bitty cards, they're too small to mail. So people are like, well, what do I do with these things? You know, but we explain, like, you know, you leave it for someone to find, or you put it in somebody's briefcase or lunchbox, and, you know, so they're more to be found rather than to be given as you normally would a card. So
that's a lot of fun.
It is. And then we have made some wine bracelets, which go around the bottom of your wine glass, and it's got a cute saying, and then you fill in your name, kind of like a wine charm.
Yeah.
That's challenging. It's a small product to get it seen on a shelf. So we've gone through a couple of iterations of packaging to try and improve how it sits on a shelf for store owners based on their feedback and things like that. So it's a little bit of trial and error trying to explain your product when you're not there to explain it.
Well, I was going to ask, do you ever do any education around the different types of products you have with your wholesale accounts, like to help them sell it better to the end consumer?
We do. Like when we're at trade shows, we talk to them, kind of tell them, go through the whole line and tell them all about it. And we just recently signed on with some reps, a rep group. And so I've been doing phone calls with each rep and going through the catalog and explaining everything. And I think it's been really helpful for them, or at least I hope it has.
I'm sure nobody can explain your products the way you can, but getting in front of your buyers and telling your reps like what your key messaging is, so that they can pass it on to their buyers, that's critical. Another thing I've been counseling some of my coaching clients on is creating a wholesale resources page on their website. And that's where they can put anything that needs further explanation, or ways that it could even be as simple as some images that you want to share with your buyers. Or if something needs a video explanation, you could do a video there, or whatever it is, you know, anything you can think of to help make it easier for those retail stores to then resell your products.
I'm going to do that.
Yeah, you should. And like, I think, you know, you should put your sales stuff up there too, your catalog and your terms and all that, but really make it a resource place for them of like, if they need help selling your products, if something needs more explanation, you could film a nice video of yourself, like walking them through the kit. Here's all the pieces and here's how they can use it. They're not going to show that to their customers, but it might help them in selling it to their.
That's true. We recently became a part of a little makers studio. It's called Mosaic Makers Collective. Yeah. And so it's a group of makers, and we have a little storefront. And I noticed like our wine tags weren't really selling. And like when we go to trade shows and retail shows, we take wine bottles and put it on there, you know?
Yeah.
So I took a bottle and did it. And now all of a sudden they're selling like crazy. So I've decided that we'll give a display wine tag to each store that orders them, and, you know, and suggest that they put it on a bottle next to them if they have space. But it really helps that visual cue of what to do with it.
Totally. Yeah. You could put merchandising tips in that resource area. You could put that, like, that's a perfect example of how just making one little change can then affect the sales. That's awesome. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah.
So Rhonda, you have a thriving custom side of your business, and we don't talk about the custom side of the stationery world that much on this podcast. Can you share a little bit with us why you love that side of the business so much? And is it a big chunk of your annual revenue?
Actually, it's the bigger part of our business. I would say at this point, it's at least 65-70% of our business.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is. I mean, that's why I can't give it up. It's our moneymaker. And we just have some great planners here in Dallas, that event planners who we've worked with for years and years and keep bringing us repeat business. So we do like super elaborate wedding invitations, birthday, baby, whatever kind of event they come up with. And then we do a lot of, we call it day up paper, any of menus, programs, anything you'd see that's paper on the day of the event in addition to the invitations. Mm-hmm. And so we just really love it. I love getting to hear about an event and like then basically having that come to life in someone's mailbox so that they kind of, it's an introduction to the event. So you kind of know what to expect and how you should dress, like what the event's going to be like.
Yeah, it sets the tone for sure.
It does. So we really enjoy it. We just get to talk with the planner or the person that's having the event, get to hear their vision, and then bring it to life.
I assume, too, that side of the business allows you to stretch your creative muscles a little bit more, too, because you are tailoring it for a specific person or a specific customer.
Right. I mean, we rarely do the same thing twice. So it is great. I mean, I don't think we'll ever give up that side of the business just because we all love it. And, you know, it's like I said, it's the moneymaker.
It's really smart too. I want to go back to what you said about you've built a lot of relationships with planners and other people in your local area. I think that's a really smart way to ensure that you've got a good flow of like custom work coming in, because you've built relationships with these people. They know your quality of work is strong. They know they can rely on you to get things done in a certain timeliness. Like, did you join local organizations, or how did you meet these people to establish those relationships?
Honestly, we started working with one planner back when I first got my letterpress, started doing some invitations for them, and kind of gained a reputation from that. Mm-hmm. They're still one of our best clients. And then a local magazine, D Wedding, they'll call us for submissions, and they've published quite a few of our invitations. So people see that. And then working with calligraphers in tandem with the invitations, they've referred us to other planners, and mm-hmm. then just brides off the street. The calligraphers have referred us, or photographers. So it's just kind of a little tight-knit network of the wedding industry, and everybody refers back and forth. But it is great for the planners, because you do have repeat business where, like, hopefully someone's only going to get married once, so you're not going to have them again. But we do have people that we do their wedding invitation, and then we start doing their baby announcements and things like that. So it's really nice.
Well, it's fun that you get to follow people through their life experiences, right? Their milestones in life. And then I was also going to say that this is just another example of how important relationships are in business. And hearing you talk about the calligraphers as well as the planners, I'm sure all of the other, you know, vendors that go into a wedding or other event like that, you know, once you do know each other and you know everyone does a great job, you're happy to refer them, right? You're happy to recommend them, and you hope that they feel the same way about you.
Exactly.
No, that's really great. So that's fascinating to me that custom is such a huge part of your business. I'm not surprised because I do think it is still alive and well and thriving. But how do you balance all three? I feel like each one is such a different go-to-market strategy. Each one has a different customer base. How do you talk to each of those audiences in a different way that keeps that business, that part of the business going?
Well, we try, and obviously the custom has a deadline. We need to get that done. And then obviously the wholesale has deadlines too. We have to have releases certain times of year. So we try and build all of that into our calendar. And then when we're reaching out to them, we started sending these little, just fun little snail mail, like for holidays or for summer or whatever. We just send a little card that has our logo on it and some cute little graphic, cute envelope. We send that out 3 or 4 times a year to actually both sides, because it doesn't it's not specific to either side of the business. So we can do one thing and just spread it out and kind of keep our name in front of both sides of the people.
That's smart. I just know I talk to a lot of people that struggle with the marketing of it, because obviously your messaging and the timing and all of the different communication you need to do to the direct to consumer or the wholesale or your custom side, they're different, but you've done a great job.
We do to our wholesale and our retail. And we don't really do that to the custom side.
Yeah, you wouldn't need to. That makes sense.
Custom sides, word of mouth, really, from our planners and our past brides. So luckily that side, we have never really had to do any strict like marketing.
If somebody's just getting started on the custom side and they want more word of mouth business, would you recommend that they reach out to planners, that they do some local projects for free for a group or something? Like, what kind of recommendations would you make to people so that they could start to build that word of mouth?
Yeah, the planners is key to me, like just because of the repeat business. I don't really recommend doing anything for free. Just, you know,
I
do it for it. I mean, we do give all our nonprofits that we do work with a discount. And so I think you can do that. I mean, I built it by doing projects for friends and family at a low cost, you know, when I started out.
Me too.
Yeah. I mean, I think we all have, right?
Yeah.
And then the planners, though, just because repeat business, that's all I can say. I can't say it enough, you know.
No, that's great. Awesome. So how do you define success in your business now that you've been in business for 13 years? I assume this answer has changed, but what about right now? How do you define success?
It's always been the same. If the client's happy, I'm happy. And I consider that to be a success. And then also financially, as long as, you know, myself and the team, we can all support ourselves, then we're good.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're running a business here, not an expensive hobby, right?
Right, exactly. I have to remind myself sometimes, but yes.
Well, yeah, I can understand that too. What advice would you give to someone else that's starting out a product-based business? It's not necessarily in the paper world, but just embarking on this entrepreneur journey, this wild ride that we are.
Well, I mean, I think that I'm a little too cautious sometimes, and I feel like it's good to like step out there before you think you're really ready to do it. That fear's probably a little bit of fear is a good thing. Mm-hmm. So that's what I would do if I could go back and do it over again, kind of get into reps a little earlier, get into the trade shows a little earlier. And in this past 2 years, we haven't done a big trade show. We did Dallas Market in January. It's not quite as big. I feel like I've lost a little ground there. So we're going to be going to New York now in August. But just, yeah, kind of push yourself out there a little bit. And then when you're hiring, you need to hire people, you should hire people. Like, it's only going to help you. You know, it's scary at first, but it always gets easier. Everyone I've hired has helped me build the business. So that's one thing I feel like people hold back on that they shouldn't.
Yeah. I feel you on that one. I did for a long time. I've told my story in the past. If I waited too long and then I went on kind of a hiring spree and, you know, it worked out in my favor. But at the same time, bringing on help made such a huge impact in my business. And it allowed me to continue to be innovative and do new things because we had people helping to keep the, you know, everything running in the background. I forgot to ask you, how did you know or when did you know that it was time to bring on help in your business? We've talked about who your people are and what they do, but how did you know?
When I was just working night and day, and basically my husband's like, you've got to get help. So basically he encouraged me to do it. And so I brought people on part-time at first. And at that point I was working out of my home. So, you know, we would just be in our home office working part, you know, they would be part-time. And then I actually purchased a home across the street from our home. That it's this tiny little house that's our studio now. And then we built a print shop out back. So then I have room for more people. And just as we would get where we were just couldn't handle it all, then we would bring on another person. So I'm up to 3 full-time people now. And then we also source out some of our packaging. We do the bin system where I have a neighbor that's awesome. And so we put a bin together for her and she packages things for us. And then we, paid by the piece for that. But yeah, it's just when you're working all the time and you have no time for yourself, that's when you
Yeah. Yeah, you don't have time to breathe. I also am an advocate for looking at your whole life as before you hire and thinking, okay, maybe do I need to hire for the business? Do I need to hire my personal life? Where can I alleviate the stress and, you know, open up some time for myself? What makes sense here? Because I think
that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We do work night and day and it gets exhausting very quickly. So a lot of people are fearful when they're hiring because of the money. They're worried about having enough work for somebody to do. Some people are concerned about having to manage another person and continue to provide them work. Like, did you have any of those fears when you were hiring?
Always. Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of stress to have other people's livelihoods, like, based on you.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm not a good manager. I like people that kind of, I can show them the ropes and then they kind of handle it themselves, which is why now, like, you know, like I was saying, the three of us do a project start to finish. I basically don't get involved in their projects unless I need to, which is rare. So someone that can basically mini-me's is nice to have, like just a duplicate of yourself that can handle everything.
It's also good that you know your strengths and your weaknesses and that you can hire people that are compatible for that, right? Like, if you are not a micromanager, you don't want to be hands-on with people. You don't want to hire somebody that does need that person shepherding them through, you know, every single project.
When we do hire new people now, the other team members really train them. I don't do a lot of it. They kind of take over and train them and show them the ropes, which is really nice.
That's really great.
Yeah.
You've clearly set up some good systems there. That's great.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, where can people find you online if they want to check out your products or follow you on social media?
On Facebook and Instagram, we're at Colorbox Letterpress.
Awesome. And what about your URL?
Colorboxletterpress.com.
Thank you so much for coming today, Rhonda, and sharing your story and the background to your company.
Thank you.
Hey friends, are you preparing for trade show season and having a tough time dealing with all the details? Well, I have a new free on-demand workshop that will help you maximize your trade show investment and keep wholesale orders coming in long after your trade show ends. If you're interested in joining me for this free masterclass, head on over to theboothblueprint.com to sign up. Again, that's theboothblueprint.com. I look forward to having you. Proof to Product is brought to you by Trade Show Bootcamp and hosted by me, Katie Hunt. Since 2011, TSBC has worked with hundreds of product-based businesses to help them uplevel, scale, and build profitable, sustainable companies. You can find our show notes and additional resources at prooftoproduct.com. And if you like what you heard today, please head over to Apple Podcasts to leave a 5-star review and subscribe. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with a new episode.